Welcome to The Grange Point, where we hang out and talk about the latest news in science technology and how they relate to your everyday life. This podcast is brought to you by the Young Scientists of Australia. We're a youth organisation aged 15 to 25 whose work is to promote science to the youth of Australia.
A good night's sleep is incredibly important for keeping your brain healthy and your body well rested. Now, the humble fruit fly can actually teach us a lot about how our brains work and help regulate sleep. Now, why is it so difficult to get up in the morning when it's cold outside? Fruit flies can help with that, plus they can also help with us understanding why and what our brain does when it sleeps and when it doesn't get a good night's sleep, and how that can interrupt out some important cleaning processes in your brain. Here in Australia, we've obviously entered winter. Much as the rest of the southern hemisphere is now finding, the days are shorter and it is colder. And when it's cold, no matter where you are in the world, it can often be difficult to get up out of bed. Mostly because, well, you just end up sleeping more. And this is a well-known fact, something that you possibly have experienced yourselves. But what is the connection between being all snuggled up in bed and finding it difficult to wake up, and what's happening inside your brain? And that's exactly what researchers from Northwestern University have published in the journal Current Biology. Now, I take a bit of a liberty there because they're not talking about your brain, and they're not talking about your bed. They're rather talking about Drosophila, fruit flies, which they were studying, and how active their brains were at different temperatures. But the result is still pretty interesting and worth discussing, because this research really gets to how your brain controls and responds to changes in temperature. Does it wake you up or not? And if there is such thing as some kind of optimum temperature inside a creature's brain, and if there is one, how is that coded? Is it differential? Some relative temperature, or is it an absolute number? All of these things are fascinating questions that have been debated for many, many years. And that's what researchers, including Marco Gallio, who's a professor of neurobiology at the Weinberg College of Arts and Sciences at Northwestern University, first authors Michael Alpert and Dominic DeFrank. Now, the interesting part that they were trying to investigate is how exactly the brain connects and interprets temperature, and then what it does with that information. And why they were studying the fruit fly is because you can build a pretty simple model pretty quickly, you can get detailed studies of their neural connections, and really map it out. Now, one of the reasons why Drosophila is used as a pretty good model system is that they have a circadian biology. That means they have this kind of 24-hour cycle of rest and activity. And that's pretty useful because we humans have a similar thing. And basically, by focusing on how these Drosophila flies respond to different kind of cues that they would receive, light and temperature, what you can do is you can study exactly how that impacts the rhythms and activity of sleep. Now, because the Drosophila fly's brain is pretty small, you can actually then study exactly which parts of the brain are responding and trying to regulate this response to changes in temperature or other light-based cues. And these are light-based cues that happen, you know, of course, with the seasons and weather. But if you're a human gallivanting across the world, though in a much more restricted fashion at the moment, jet lag is an important thing as well that can throw off people's entire balances and rhythms. So if you've traveled a long-distance flight, you would have experienced a huge time zone shift. Maybe in your own country, if you have daylight savings, you would have experienced just feeling slightly out of sorts when that time change happens. The sun comes up at a different time and your whole day seems a little bit out of whack. These kind of external light and temperature cues can wholly change the way in which your body responds to the day. And that's exactly what they're trying to study here, using Drosophila as a sort of a base model. Another big question that they were trying to get to is temperature sensing and how it's actually done and whether or not there's some programmed thermostat number inside the brain. Now, what they actually did find by studying the receptors and the fly antenna, that there is actually a comfort zone level for the Drosophila, and it's around 25 degrees. So when they monitored and changed the temperature for these Drosophila and looked at the activity of these Drosophila, so see how much they started to move around, and actually it measured their neural activities, particularly in these areas and receptors in the fly antenna, they could actually see how the fly responded to the temperature change, whether it was high activity or low activity in these neurons. What they found is that actually when it was a lower temperature, below the sweet spot for them of 25 degrees, it's a pretty low level of activity. As soon as you get above it, well, the activity level changes. The fly becomes more active, which makes sense. But it means that these temperature sensing parts of their antenna are actually directly getting fed back into the brain, which is starting to govern alertness, awakeness, and activity. So what they found is that these antennae are connected to some neurons that are part of a large network that controls actually the cycles of activity and sleep. When this cold sensing circuit they discovered is active, the target cells, which are normally activated by morning light, get shut down, which means if it's cold, the circuits inside the tricephalous brain that normally kick it into overdrive when it senses the coming sun of the dawn, actually just tell it to keep sleeping. Or in other words, if it's cold outside, you don't want to get out of your bed. Now, that's a bit of a psychological thing, not actually a neuron thing, but it also is what's happening basically inside these tricephalous brains. Now, the one thing to remember about fruit flies like Drosophila is they're pretty much cold-blooded. So, like humans, they are creatures of comfort, but also, unlike humans, they're out of a necessity trying to stay warm. Now, an important part for humans, though, which is still tied exactly the same for Drosophila, is that we seek out nice temperatures, because when it is nice and warm or we're comfortable, it's much easier for us to sleep. It's much easier for us to sleep, then our body rests and recovers, and sleep is incredibly important for your body to function healthily. So we seek out environments where we're able to sleep well, because that means our body is in better condition and we thus are better able to survive. That's pretty much survival of the fittest, or survival of the person that's able to sleep the best, in other words. Now that also applies to flies, who need to do exactly the same thing. Now, of course, we don't know how the sensory systems have evolved in humans and how much they differ from flies, but that's something worth investigating. However, the pathways used here inside the Drosophila and the way that the temperature control neurons and sensing antenna and their antenna are linked back to the sleep and activity regulation centers in the brain is incredibly important, but also makes logical sense, as we said. The flies are used to being woken up, and that starts to trigger up and make the brain more active. And one of those things is also related to temperature. Now, the thing is, for humans, we're still trying to get our heads around how brains respond to and interact with different stimuli, what can make us sleepy and what can make us feel well rested, and what governs why we get sleep and why we don't get sleep, and what all things like light and timing and temperature have to do with it. So this study is actually very useful and took a lot of years of research to get to this point, to outline the ways that temperature can have a direct influence on activity, which can lead to further studies, obviously, in other models, in other species, maybe a mouse model, a rodent model, or perhaps in humans as well, eventually. But can point scientists, and neuroscientists in particular, to look at different areas. Some great research published in the journal Current Biology, lead authors Michael Abbott and Dominic Frank. Now, getting a good night's sleep is incredibly rewarding and feels really great and your body feels refreshed. But if you don't, you have sleep fragmentation. Basically, you get repetitive or short sleep interruptions. It can really make you feel very tired in the day, and it's especially bad for older people. And this kind of sleep regulation or lack thereof can have real negative impacts on people's quality of life. But also, chronic sleep loss can increase the risk people developing Alzheimer's and other diseases like Parkinson's, mostly because scientists are suspecting that there's some kind of connection between these neurodegenerative diseases. So how these underlying processes of these neurodegenerative diseases are actually connected to the loss of sleep or disturbed sleep hasn't really been clear. And scientists have been trying to piece that together for a while. We can see that chronic sleep loss has an increased likelihood or increased risk of people with both that condition developing Alzheimer's or another neurodegenerative condition like Parkinson's or ALS. These things all involve some level of neurodegeneration, and we can see a strong correlation between that and chronic sleep loss. So what ties these two things together? That's what researchers from University of Pennsylvania have been digging into, including principal investigator Nirinjari Naidu, a associate professor in sleep and chronobiology, which is basically the study of biomechanical regulations of sleep and time. Now, this is a really interesting area, and she's been working with a large team of researchers, including PhD candidate and author of the study, Sarah Lee. Now, what they were trying to look at is trying to find some level of explanation for the connection between sleep loss and just in general neurodegenerative conditions. Now, a starting point for this investigation has been a finding that some of these lab animals in studies and labs across the world, when they're having a normal sleeping pattern, you can see that they dial up what's called the proteostasis process. Now, this proteostasis process clears away any harmful or potentially aggregated up clumps of protein. And these can often get cluttered and clutter up the brain and the neuron, the synapses, and lead to neurodegenerative disorders. So getting them flushed out pretty regularly through this proteostasis process is something that happens in lab animals during sleep. And what researchers like Naidu and her colleagues have been looking at the proteostasis process and a key part of it called the PERK signaling pathway, which basically regulates the creation of this flushing out process. So basically, when the PERK signaling pathway sees a build up of these unwanted protein aggregates, these lumps of protein, well, it causes cells around it to temporarily stop their assembly of most proteins. And they actually can study the way in which that this signaling pathway, the PERK pathway, works in a lot of different species, because you can actually hunt it down and find it and watch how it works. And you can do that in, again, fruit flies, Drosophila, and other types of models as well. Another one that's often used is zebrafish. These are often kept in labs because they're fast to breed, have quick cycle times, and you can use them for this kind of studies, much in the same way as Drosophila are. But the key part here is that Drosophila and zebrafish are very, very, very distant evolutionary. One is a fruit fly, an insect, the other is a very small fish. Now, they're both small, but that's pretty much it. When it comes in evolutionary terms, the mechanisms that they've developed for their species aren't very well connected. But if they both have this PERK signaling pathway to help flush out these build-up of protein aggregates when the creature is sleeping, that suggests that if these two distant relatives have it, then perhaps humans may also have it. Now, they prove this by using a small molecule compounds that block key parts of the pathway and see what happens when they sleep much less than normal. So what they did is they basically used this blocking technique to basically have a control study where they let some keep their normally signal pathway working and others not. And what they ended up seeing was the ones with the block pathway got much less sleep than normal. So blocking this PERK signaling pathway with genetic techniques first in Drosophila did the same thing as what they did when they did it using a molecule base in zebrafish. You could also do the inverse, which is overload that process, forcing the overproduction of this PERK signaling pathway and protein flushing out process. Guess what happens? Well, the flies slept a lot more. Then you can sort of target it more down and look at specific neurons that produce a key wakefulness promoting hormone in the Drosophila. And if you use that to knock down the levels of PERK inside the Drosophila, well, they sleep less. And if you ramp it up, well, okay, they sleep more. So it shows the connection between this flushing out process of these build-up of protein aggregates using the PERK signaling pathway, and a deep connection between that and the actual amount. And this suggests that there's not just one, but possibly multiple ways that this PERK signaling pathway is helping to regulate sleep process in multiple different brain circuits. This is the first time that scientists have identified a bidirectional biological mechanism tied to sleep proteostasis, the process of flushing out this buildup of protein. So that means they've connected a sleep response to this flushing out of building up of proteins inside brains, which is very useful to actually prove, and also shown that it's bidirectional. It can be ramped up and ramped down. And it shows that potentially there's a link then to being awake and more awake, leading to an increase in the amount of protein aggregate accumulating in the brain. Basically, if you have more buildup, it's probably because you've been more awake longer, which means you've had less time having the proteostasis process flush it all out. Now, this is pretty interesting because it shows how the concept of being awake and sleeping and what goes on in your brain when you're awake and when you're sleeping is also tied intrinsically to the healthy maintenance of not just your limbs, but also your brains and lots of other systems in your body. This will all be connected, of course, with a number of other conditions. So getting a good night's sleep is important, but understanding why, if you don't get a good night's sleep, what might be going on is also equally important. It helps reduce stress on the brain if we can find ways to treat people who have this chronic interrupted sleep. So there's some great research published in the journal Current Biology. Researchers from University of Pennsylvania, including Sarah Lee, Daniel A. Lee, under direction of Nirinji Naidu.
This has been the Young Scientists of Australia's podcast, Lagrange Point.
Humble fruit fly Drosophila can help us understand why temperature is connected to sleep in the brain and what happens when you go to sleep or get a bad night's sleep and leading to buildups of aggregates in your brain.
Our ending theme was composed by Audionautix. Head to ysa.org.au for more information about the Young Scientists of Australia.